Hi, I'm Glenn Harper, CPA and owner of Harper & Company, CPAs Plus, and partner in Sula Consulting. In each episode, my co-host Julie Smith, Harper & Company's practice manager and partner in Sula Consulting, and I will interview a different guest about their entrepreneurial journey. The podcast features interviews with business owners, aka entrepreneurs, who bring intriguing and entertaining clarity to the entire entrepreneurial journey, giving others confidence to build their business. Our goal is to provide actionable value to you, the entrepreneur, to help you do business or build a business. Every entrepreneur deserves to enjoy the journey. Learning from others offers valuable insight and inspiration. We want to provide insight on the why, the how, the shortcuts, and the value add that many entrepreneurs wish they would have had identified at the onset of their journey. Sit back and enjoy the journey. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Empowering Entrepreneurs Podcast. I'm Glenn Harper.
Julie Smith.
What's going on, Julie?
You know, I think we've made it through the technical era here. So
it's a struggle is real. Thank God I'm not on that bus too long.
Yeah, we didn't let you get out of your seat, obviously.
That's great. Well, we've got a great guest today, so I'm going to go through and read a little intro here. I'd like to introduce Maria Maldonado, the Chief Empowerment Officer at Maria Maldonado Smith Consulting, where she digs deep into her client's frontal lobe to identify their goals and help them achieve that. She calls this her Executive Vision Imagery Program. Maria's is a content creator, co-host of her podcast, and speaker for Confessions of a Corporate Mom, aka Managing Motherhood, Maniacs, and Marriage, all which seem to be very easy to manage. She also in her free time is a contributing writer at The Daily Drip. Her passion is to inspire individuals to be their best by helping her clients identify and set goals. Then she prepares the roadmap so the individual can actually find the path to achieve those goals. As a daughter of an immigrant parent, the passion for opportunity is what drives her every day. She travels the world with a mission to empower others to be their best. Welcome, Maria, and thanks for being on our show.
Thank you so much, Glenn. Thank you so much for having me. Oh, you and Julie both. Thank you.
Oh, it's a long road to get here, but by God, we're here.
Yeah.
So this is great.
We've been through so much already.
And we were communicating through different ways because we couldn't hear each other for the first 40 minutes of our introduction, right?
Right, exactly.
But that's the first rule for all of our listeners. Never give up. If you want it to work, it will work.
Right.
So that's exciting.
That is right.
Oh, great. Well, welcome to the show. And, you know, we like to kind of start off to get to know our guests a little bit, you know, where they're from, how they do what they do. And, you know, I did some research here a little bit. And Heather, you're from Lexington, Kentucky. Is that true?
I am born and raised in Lexington, Kentucky. I do not live there anymore. We now reside in sunny South Florida, but I was born and raised in Lexington, Kentucky. Great place to grow up.
Are you a big horse racing fan then, or not so much?
Yes, actually, my father came to this country, like you mentioned earlier, daughter of an immigrant. My father came to this country on the back of a horse. So
no
he
way.
Was in the horse racing industry. Yes. And so worked his way up all the way from, you know, exercise boy to groomer to breeder, all the different potential jobs you could have in the thoroughbred industry. So that's what landed him in Lexington and where he met my mom and married her.
How about that? And did you ever do any horse racing yourself or hang around the stables or not so much?
No, I never rode. My father always saw horse racing as a job, a profession, something that was too dangerous. So no, I never rode. I never did any, you know, dressage or anything like that. No jumping, no nothing, because he just found it to be very too dangerous for me.
Oh, it's dangerous. All right.
Yes.
Where did your dad emigrate from?
Argentina.
Don't cry for me. Great. So what was the impetus to go from there to here? He just says, I got to get out of here. There's an opportunity job. Is that what happened?
Yeah, I would say that my father was, you know, a dreamer. He was his own visionary. And so I think that so much of the work that I do is really built on so much of the upbringing that I had as a child, which was to dream big and to take risks. And, you know, my father left behind, you know, his mom, his dad, his siblings to kind of chart this path for himself. He also came to this country when he was 26, so he didn't speak a word of English. So at 26 years of age, having to immerse yourself in a culture and learn how to speak a language and communicate with people, it was difficult. It was difficult for him. So there were a lot of things he had to overcome in order to get to where he, you know, eventually was.
Well, geez, just for you to get rid of your Kentucky accent to move to Florida was probably a big deal too. So you did good on that.
Thank you.
You betcha. Now, from at home, did you have any siblings?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Older brother, younger brother.
Okay. So, you know, when we see people, when they come out of, you know, they grow up, like we're trying to figure out, like, obviously, the answer has already been answered for us, that your dad started the whole entrepreneurial thing of working and following the dream and doing your thing. But when you decided to go to University of Kentucky, be a Wildcat, a political silence, how did you pick political science as a career or as a major?
I would say that that actually started when my third grade teacher asked us to get out a piece of paper and write down three goals on a piece of paper, just three things we wanted to accomplish. And I kind of took the assignment. Maybe I misunderstood the assignment. Maybe I nailed it. I don't really know. But I wrote down that I wanted to graduate college because, as I mentioned, my father came to this country as an immigrant. He had the equivalent of an eighth grade education. So I wanted to graduate college. I wanted to become Miss Kentucky. I'd been watching Miss America with my mom ever since I was about 5-6 years of age, and it was on TV every year. And so I wanted to become Miss Kentucky, represent my state at the Miss America pageant. And then I put that I wanted to be a United States Senator. And the reason that I put that, I reason with that by saying my dad watched a lot of C-SPAN to learn how to speak English. And so it was free, like PBS, we had Kentucky Educational Television, so KET, PBS, C-SPAN, any of those types of channels he would watch. And so I would watch them with him. And I thought, wow, this seems kind of cool. They get to kind of, they're passionate. They talk about, things that they are interested in. They're setting laws. And I think as an 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old, I just started to become intrigued with that. And ultimately, I think that's what drove me to major in political science. I was a double major. I actually went to the University of Kentucky on a vocal performance scholarship, thinking that I might take that path and either become, a Broadway singer or an opera singer was kind of the direction that my instructors wanted me to go in, but I wasn't interested really in opera at that time. So I stayed the path with political science, ended up interning in DC for Secretary of Labor Elaine Chao in between my sophomore and junior year, and enjoyed political science, but then got out and went, kind of worked in that field for the Department of Agriculture because I won the title of Miss Kentucky in 2004. And you're actually a paid spokesperson for the Kentucky Department of Agriculture. And at the time, I was promoting a program called No Ifs, Ands, or Buts, which is basically saying that if you're under the age of 18, you cannot purchase cigarettes in the state of Kentucky. Not a very sexy program when tobacco at that time was our number one commodity. Mm-hmm. This was pre-tobacco buyout. So I wasn't very popular when I was going into some of these Eastern Kentucky and Western Kentucky schools preaching or teaching this message. So I shifted it to a conversation about money and compound interest and how if they saved the money that they would have spent on a pack of cigarettes over a year's time, over 10 years' time, they'd end up being a millionaire. And so I gave them all of the different things that they could potentially purchase by saving their money instead of buying a pack of cigarettes. That converted into a job after my year as Miss Kentucky, and I ended up becoming a Goodwill ambassador for the State Department of Agriculture. And I ended up then promoting a program called Kentucky Proud, which was essentially farm to table. And it was promoting farmers and food producers and the over 58,000 farm families throughout the state of Kentucky. I was given an opportunity to represent them. So it was a really cool kind of shift into that. But then I realized, I think through those journeys, that I wasn't necessarily into politics as much as I originally thought. And I shifted quickly into corporate when I was actually at an event promoting the Salsa Sisters of all things at a restaurant. At a grocery store in Northern Kentucky. And I found a pharmaceutical sales district manager who kind of plucked me out of obscurity and out of government work and said, you belong in the corporate space selling and talking to physicians. So that's what really began my corporate journey.
So it's funny, you all of a sudden have this platform by winning, working hard in school, and then you won the Miss Kentucky thing, and all of a sudden now you have this great platform to put a message out there. But the message was not political. I mean, it was somewhat political, but it turned more financial and it turned into awareness. Like, that's a heck of a platform to be on, right? A lot of people don't get to do that at that age. How did that impact you, other than the fact that you're like, well, I don't know, like the politics side, you wanted to go into making money at that point, or what switched with you?
I think there are a couple different things. You mean, you hit the nail on the head with the money piece. I was newly married and we weren't making a lot of money, and there was an opportunity to switch and go into a corporate setting where I had the ability and opportunity to essentially drive my financial future. I could earn, as much money as I wanted, but I mean, definitely there were bonus opportunities and structures in place that allowed me to take my kind of ambition and desire to be successful and use it in a way that financially benefited me. But I also gained a lot of skills. And I think that to your question about kind of making that shift or giving me that platform, it definitely helped. I mean, I made a ton of connections across the state. It allowed me to, at 23 years of age, speak to thousands of school kids across the state of Kentucky, which just, I feel like if you can stand up in front of a group of 6th through 8th graders, you can do just about anything.
Anybody.
I know, because I have an 8th grader right now.
They'll say anything to you. Yeah, you don't know what that right. question is going to be.
Right.
It's funny when, reading your bio and getting to know you a little bit before we started chatting, the corporate ladder thing that you switched over to GM, but then mm-hmm. it seemed like right away you decided that obviously the chaos of motherhood, business and everything, and you're like, I need some therapy. So you started doing writing, and that was, I suspecting that was a way to channel that outlet for you to kind of, that was yes. your therapeutic session probably, which is kind of cool that you got a chance to do that, because who gets to do creative writing when you're working at a financial company? That just doesn't happen. So how'd that happen?
Exactly. Yes. And it really was born out of a time in my corporate career where I realized, as much as I was, driven towards leadership and had some natural innate abilities in leadership, I wasn't necessarily developed to be a very good leader. And I think there's a lot of honesty and vulnerability in kind of saying that I started out as a really crappy leader because I was really ambitious internally and just with myself. I'd always been competitive with myself. I competed in, the Miss Kentucky system, the Miss America system. So I knew how to compete with me, with Maria, and I knew how she could be successful. I then made a lot of generalizations and assumptions when I went to lead a team that everyone felt the same way as me. Everyone wanted the same things as I did. Everyone wanted to be just as successful. They wanted to make as much money or even more money than me. And so by doing that, I applied, unfortunately, some processes and systems to my team that they didn't appreciate or they didn't like. They didn't find that was very much, leadership driven. So Confessions of a Corporate Mom, Managing Motherhood, Maniacs, and Marriage really was born out of how I was balancing all of that. And then a tough conversation I ended up having with my boss at the time, who didn't think that it was a good fit for me, and me having to literally fight for my role on a team that I was, promoted to. And so through that, I kind of wrote my way out of those sticky situations and did a lot of research, did a lot of self-reflection, a lot of evaluation, and really leaned into leadership from books, from mentors, from you name it. I was basically I was just a sponge. I was soaking up every opportunity that I could in order to learn as much as I could to be a better leader of people. And I think the blog really allowed me to also explore my own misgivings and be real about them.
So that's
did your team know about your blog? Just curious.
Yeah, some of them did. Some of them did. Some of the females, I would write about things too. Like, I mean, I've wrote about some embarrassing situations as well, that happened to me on the road or. A time that I literally peed my pants because I was like, I am not a very good flyer and there was a lot of turbulence and it was bumpy and I really needed to go and probably should have before they put the sign on. And you're like, oh my goodness. And yeah. So I wrote about those things that I'm willing to admit that, wild, crazy things happen when, you just, instead of just standing up and being like, I have to go, it doesn't matter that the plane's landing, I have to use the restroom.
Well, I envision your blog to be like, well, today Jim really made me mad because he won't follow my process. And working through some of those, and Jim's reading it and coming to work the next day like, hey, why am I on your blog?
No, and I did a lot of those in like hindsight, I would wait and write a lot of them kind of, you know, in the past and pull from past experiences. I pulled from some experiences when I was in, you know, the pharmaceutical industry and kind of shared some of those and how I was learning, because I had gone through a management training program that essentially gave me the stamp of approval and said I was ready. And so I explored some of those things to say, you know, but was I really ready? Was I really ready for, you know, this type of leadership step? I also was only 29 years old when I became a leader. And I was a young mom of two. So I was balancing a lot. And I think at the time I thought, well, this is just natural to me because I'm always used to balancing a lot. But then I realized I needed a lot more help than I was willing to admit.
So question is then, this is the age-old question, is are leaders born or are they developed? Is it something you had, or you had to grow into that? I mean, maybe it's your true self. What do you think it is?
I mean, I'm an Enneagram 7 enthusiast. I would say I'm naturally inclined towards leadership, but I do believe leaders are developed because people are nuanced, and we are dynamic, unique individuals. So there is no one size fits all approach to leadership. And I think what ends up happening sometimes in a corporate setting is we do apply a lot of systems and processes that work because we have to, at the end of the day, get to the bottom line. We have to achieve the goal or hit the mark or the number or whatever. But when you really get down to it, if you pour into each of your people individually to understand truly how they want to be led and what drives them, to understand them, I think that's what really makes a good leader. And that to me takes time, that takes development, that takes coaching, that takes mentoring, because we're not going to just get it right. I mean, are there some people who are just better with people? Absolutely. I mean, I consider that to be one of my superpowers, is I'm just really good with people. I enjoy learning about people. I enjoy understanding their motivators and why they're showing up for their life. It's why the program Executive Vision Imagery exists, because I wish I would have had that program when I was in corporate, which is to allow a leader the opportunity to get to know themselves, but then also get to know their team in a really fun and unique setting where at the end of it, they're all making a visual representation of their goals, their personal and professional goals. And that's leading them to, you know, success as a team. So it's building that individual and team cohesion.
So here you are working at GM, and then all of a sudden one day you just decide, I'm going to go on my own and be a consultant and help all this up. How did that happen? Because again, it sounds like you had a cushy job. You can do all this stuff on the side. You can be a mom. You do your thing. And you're like, you know what? I want more. So how did you make that decision?
It's interesting that you say it that way too, because I actually thought about it that way too. Why did I want more? I found myself, my husband and I had taken a trip to Scotland. We had just moved to South Florida. He had been promoted with his organization, and we had just moved. We got three kids in three different schools. We moved into our new home, into our new town. Like, everything was brand new. We literally did everything you're not supposed to do, like all at once. And so we take off on this trip that we'd already planned when we had lived in, from when we were living in Nashville. And I found myself on a bridge in Scotland, in Inverness, Scotland, of all places. We had met some friends the year prior in a pub in Ireland and became fast friends. So we were visiting them. And my husband and I had a day to ourselves, and I find myself on this bridge, and I just had this overwhelming feeling that there was something more out there for me, and that my journey that I always thought would be a career that ended in corporate with me retiring, you know, at 65 or whatever that year would be, was actually coming to an end. I just had this feeling. I just knew it. And so, you know, kind of like tear stained, I looked at my husband and I'm like, I don't know why I'm crying, but I have to leave my job. Like, I just, there's something more out there for me. And I don't know why I feel this way right now. I don't know what it is that I'm supposed to do. I just have this feeling that has come over me, and I have to, like, I can't. And if I was being honest with myself, and in all honesty now and full transparency, that feeling had probably been bubbling inside of me for a few years, and I had just kept ignoring it because I was really afraid. I was really scared of the possibility of what my life would look like without that corporate, you know, cushiness, without, you know, the yearly bonus, without the company vehicle, the expense card, et cetera. Like, it's hard sometimes for us to step outside of that and see what our life could look like. But I think in that moment, it just reminded me that I couldn't run from it anymore. I couldn't hide from it anymore. And so I chose to lean into it. My husband is extremely practical and not a risk taker, which is, I mean, he is in his own right, but he is very much like, nope, I love my corporate role. He has a fantastic team that he's built. So in his practicality, which is great because it keeps me grounded, he said, okay, this is awesome, but you have to come up with a plan. Like, you can't just leave, right? You have to have a plan. And I am a planner and I'm a goal setter. So that's exactly what I did. And lo and behold, I mean, the pandemic happened and I didn't know that in September of 2019. I figured I would be kind of, you know, in the crevices or, you know, on the weekends building out this potential company and what it looked like, or just building out what I even thought that I might want to do. The consulting firm piece didn't come till almost a year later, you know, towards the fall of 2020. But in the in-between, I was building out the infrastructure. I was networking. I was connecting. I was trying to figure out what it is that I wanted to create. And in October of 2020, I started my LLC. I started MMS Consulting Firm, and then immediately started kind of hitting the ground running to where when I left in June of 2021, I was ready.
So you left your job in June of 2021, but started all of this the fall prior.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. And really, really 2 years prior, I mean, you know, I guess a year and a half prior, because it really started in 2019 with kind of that moment. And then I returned home and immediately kind of started getting, you know, to work, like hitting the ground running, talking to people, you know, asking people, what do you think? Where do you need help? You know, where do you lack in help in a corporate setting, et cetera. And that's really how the company was developed.
So you're in Scotland, you're obviously hitting some scotch, and then you have this epiphany, or did it not go down like that? Or were you in Stavanger on the top of the mountain is usually where things happen, but you're on the bridge.
Right.
So
again, I was on a bridge, and it was like a rickety bridge too. Like, I was a little afraid that it might not crash into the water, but you know, it was just, it was around, I want to say it was morning time, because I know we were taking a stroll. So not saying that I haven't taken a shot of scotch or whiskey that early in the morning, but that particular day, I don't think we had yet. We had not gotten started.
Well, you know,
I think it probably drove me to drink the rest of the day.
Oh my gosh. Your husband's probably hitting it hard and hitting all the good stuff. Well, and it's the craziest thing how sometimes these things come to us. It could be anything. I'm making the joke about the scotch in Scotland because it's an awesome place over there, but you just never know how it's going to hit you. And when it hits, try to listen. And you listened. And how in-depth did you go? I'm just out of curiosity. You have this feeling. You're on the bridge. You have the thought. How long did it take you to go, holy shnikes, this is going to happen? And you have that revelation and you tell your husband. Is that like in 5 minutes? Is that a day, a week? How long did it happen from
the
time you
had the bridge?
Was he there too with you?
We were on the bridge.
So you just reached over and said to him, hey, dude, here's his
it. Yeah, we were standing there.
Talk about peeing your pants. He probably was.
Dan's like, I'm jumping off this bridge. Dan's like, I'm out of here.
Yeah, that's what I said. I mean, I think it was just one of those moments where then we kind of walked around a little bit, and my husband is an investigator, so that's like his personality. So immediately he starts asking questions. Okay, you know, why, what, how, you know, what are you thinking? Where is this coming from? You know, all of the questions. So he's really good at kind of digging in and getting to the root of where he needs to be in order to feel comfortable about that decision. But no, it was pretty instantaneous. Yeah. I mean, I'm your wife's crying on a bridge. You're going to ask, like, are you okay?
He didn't have the same epiphany. He just got smart and goes, well, I just need to support my wife here and do what she needs to do. So that's smart.
So how old were your kids at this point?
Oh gosh. So I'm trying to think. My oldest was a sixth grader. My our oldest son was a fourth grader, and the baby was in pre-K. So he was in like a Montessori pre-K program. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we had, you know, like I said, three kids in three different schools. He was in like a pre-K 4 program. It was madness. And then I throw all of this at him that we're going to, you know.
I mean, in my world, that seems totally normal. I don't see the issue. So this is where, again, people that are used to the organized chaos, if you will, everything is an opportunity. They don't look at it like, oh my God, that's too much more, I can't do it. They're like, oh, let's go do that. That looks like fun. I suspect that's your mindset from when you were a kid growing up.
Yes, yes. And I think that's where a lot of my dad is kind of instilled in me in that way of, okay, this is just a new adventure. This is a new opportunity. This is something new. I might not know have all the answers. I mean, I know from my dad's story that he never had any of the answers. And oftentimes you just put one foot in front of the other and you just kind of go and you make it work and you figure it out. And I knew that I had that attitude. I knew that I had some built and resilience from almost being fired and really fighting for my position and rightfully within the company and then building a team that was incredibly successful where it led us to President's Club and it led us to promotions for team members, et cetera. So I knew that I had what it took. I think a lot of it was just that fear and is the self-limiting beliefs of just saying, but do I really have what it takes? And like, am I truly capable of this?
A lot of that comes with, mentoring. It comes with upbringing. It comes with just your team around you to support you. Who do you think was the most crucial person or thing that gave you the strength to believe in you to go do that?
I would have to say my husband. I would have to say, my husband, because at that point too, I mean, we're still in the pandemic. We're still like in it. And so, I mean, there was just the five of us in the house, for the most part. So as I'm building this, but I will say there was actually a pivotal conversation, and I have to give credit to a girl I grew up with in Lexington. She is now a thriving business owner. We ended up going to high school together. We ended up being sorority sisters, all the things. We competed in Miss Kentucky together, all the stuff. And I had a conversation with her, and it was interesting because at the time I was thinking, well, maybe it's not that I start my own company or my own business. Maybe I just need to actually leave this corporate role and go find something else. Maybe that's what I need. And I remember having this conversation with her, and she said, wait, why would you go and just work for someone else when you've got all the tools necessary that you need right instilled in you? Like, you should be going and doing your own thing. Everything that you're telling me that you want to go do and help another company do, actually, it would be better if you went and did that for a lot of companies, because not just one company needs that. Every company needs that. Every company needs leaders who, know why they're showing up every day, that pour into themselves so that they pour into their people. They have really balanced personal, professional lives, whatever that looks like to them, because balance is such a nuanced word, in and of itself. But that was a really motivating conversation. And I still keep in touch with her, of course, and I've thanked her on numerous occasions to say, you were really a catalyst for me deciding, okay, it's not that I need to look in the direction of another company. I actually need to look in the direction of myself, do that mirror work to remind myself that I actually have all the tools that I need to take this business to the next level already in the 17 years of corporate experience that I had at that time.
Yeah. It's funny, you had all the tendencies, you had all the markers. You didn't know you were going to be an entrepreneur, but you were effectively acting like one. You were building your resume and you didn't know, and it just took somebody to say, you know what, you can do this without being in that structure. You can build your own structure, which, again, that revelation is pretty cool.
But I think we've got to go back. So growing up, did you ever, probably not mow yards, but paint rocks? Sing for people to get to, did you ever have any of that entrepreneurial growing up that you can look back now and you're like, I did have that, or like, oh, I was always doing that, or I always joke and say my kids are very bossy. They're very good leaders, right? Like, how do you turn that around? But like, I totally can see, you know what I mean? If you have that self-reflection, even as your parents, did you have that growing up?
I did. And it's funny you say that. I was pretty bossy. I mean, I was the only girl in between two boys, and my younger brother was really, I always say he's like my little child. I feel like I still kind of boss him around because he's 5 years younger than me. But I ran an environmental club in my neighborhood. And I will say I somewhere I still have the book, and it was like 101 ways to save the earth. And I remember poring over this book, and I still am very involved and love to recycle. It's a very big part of my life. Little things that we do and don't do in order to, reduce, reuse, recycle, renew. And so I would say that that's probably the earliest piece of like my leadership development or even my entrepreneurial journey was gathering a group of neighborhood friends to be a part of this environmental club where we'd go around and pick up trash and make sure that it made it into the recycle bins or into people's garbage instead of on the sidewalk.
So you're building a team and leading them towards a goal.
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
And here we are doing the same thing. Isn't it funny how you end up and you didn't even know it was going to happen? And just think, if you wouldn't have answered the calling, whatever that moment you had, where would you be today different? I can't even comprehend it.
Yeah, I don't know that I could comprehend it because there's moments, you know, I mean, I think every entrepreneur has those moments where they think, gosh, if I just look back now, maybe I can like get back that old life. You know, it's like I'm still not so far removed from it that maybe, just maybe, I could get it back. Now, I mean, I think I had those moments a couple times, just, you know, in doubting my own abilities or when things were moving not as fast as I wanted them to. And I've learned to enjoy like planting seed phases and then enjoy the phases where I am incredibly active and I'm so busy that I can't even think straight. Or like today where we literally have dogs and kids running around because it's spring break. And I've got a kid who I'm like, we have a neurodivergent child who unfortunately does not listen when you say, can you be quiet and stop playing with Legos? Because he's like, no, I'm just going to continue playing with my Legos.
You have does to, not process you learn that. To lean into those moments, right? Instead of running to
you
them
do.
Because it's,
you do.
I mean, we're in a nice studio, but you and I were, you know, talking about, we both have kids on spring break. How do you make all of this work and how relatable that is to, you know, females and males, but, you know, I think more the female entrepreneur where you're just trying to fit everything in to each specific second and hoping that there's no nanosecond where something goes slightly off key because you're not going to make it on time then.
Right, exactly.
We all know it's way harder for the dude entrepreneurs. We have so many more things to think about, so many more responsibilities. It's really impossible. I don't know how we even survive. No, obviously we're joking because, again, the multi-level juggling of entrepreneurs and the different responsibilities at work and home and how that all works, again, there's just, it is what it is. And nobody can complain about it because that's the way it has to be. So you just got to figure it out, right? And if you have somebody supporting you on both sides, it sure does make it easy, right? Not easy, but easier. At least somebody believes in you and you can do what you got to do.
Yes. Yes. It takes the pressure off. I think that's the biggest piece of it, is that it's that peace of mind that you have someone who's there to support you, who's got your back and who understands what you're trying to achieve. So you're not in it alone. And even though my husband isn't in the day-to-day of my business, I know that when I need to run something by him or I need his support or I need, you know, just his ear, just to hear me vent or to work through something, that he's there for me. And that's something that I don't take for granted because I've talked to other entrepreneurs who don't have that at all.
Entrepreneurism is a very lonely world, and nobody really can relate except another entrepreneur. So it's really, that's why they having those mentors and supportive people around you can really help, because that just doesn't exist for most people, which is crazy, but that's the way it is. Today we can see it on the internet, but that's not the same.
Yeah. So you've kind of alluded to this, you know, before, and maybe you'll pick the same one that you have, but what is your superpower?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I did mention that earlier, that it was people. And I would say, connection, connecting with people. When I work with private clients, I love the one-on-one work that we do because I truly get to lean into them and get to understand them, how they work, what it is they're working on. And I get to help motivate them. I pull things out of them that I know is in there. And I think the same works in a corporate setting as well. I just enjoy talking with leaders, working with leaders, with individual contributors who are trying to be the best that they possibly can be. Because just like we talked about the entrepreneurial journey of balancing all of this, of, you know, the motherhood, the craziness, the, you know, like the marriage, the maniacs and the motherhood, you know, it's the whole thing. And now it's the entrepreneurial journey on top of it. People are at the core of everything that we do. And so when I can connect with someone and make them feel more seen, more heard, and less afraid to be open, then I feel like I've done my job. And so whether that's working with the U.S. House of Representatives, with Paramount, with Constellation Brands, with Johnson & Johnson, like whoever I work with, it is really just leaning in to say, how do you want to show up for yourself in your life every day? Why are you showing up? Do you know your why? Do you have your core values and your mission statement for your own life? Not the company's core values, not the company's mission statement, but like, what is yours? Like, what is Julie's statement that says like, this is who I am. This is who I am in my life. This is how I show up in my life. You know, what are my core values that I'm not going to, you know, compromise on or deviate from? Because those are really innate to me. Those are the things that keep me, and that's what sets me apart from everyone else. Even if they're the same words to describe it, it's like, but those are the words that I really use to describe, you know, who I am. So that I think is a big piece of my superpower, which is baked and built into the program.
So I love that, but I have one more question. Have you sent that person that tried to force you out of leadership like a free trial or a free session?
Well,
I don't know. That came to me as you were speaking your why of like, This person had earned the spot at the table to be a leader, and you were kind of, you know, asked to leave gracefully or whatever that was. And Look where you are now. Look where that led you. And, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, I haven't. I do know that person, I did write a blog about the situation after everything had passed. And probably had maybe felt had a different perspective on how things ended than I did, because I think as women, you know, we learn to just smile and say, okay, that's great that you tried to screw me over and get me fired from a company for no reason, for no apparent reason, none whatsoever. Not performance based, nothing. I mean, the team was doing great, other than maybe just some management style, you know, coaching and mentoring that you could have done, but you didn't need to fire me for that. That could have been a conversation that we had. Similar to the cups of coffee on your desks right now, that's exactly what he showed up with. No paperwork, no nothing, no prior conversation. It was just, hey, I just showed up and decided that he, you know, didn't think that I was going to be a good fit for the team anymore. So no, I have not touched base with him in a long time.
So here's a so here's a funny question or interesting question. So normally to get people to relax and open up and tell things, You gotta have some training on that, or you're just one of those natural people that you want to talk to, right? So here you are having not only get the skill set to be able to have people trust you to tell you what's really going on. What's your success rate on when they tell you that you go, I got this, and you know exactly what to do for them, and they're like, oh my God, how did you know? I mean, does that happen all the time, or is it, you know, it takes a lot of sessions to get somebody to open up?
No. I would say that because I'm open and I'm willing to be open with people, it creates a level of vulnerability in them. I think that you have to mirror what you want to get out of people. And so if you're not willing to be open with them and share your story or your vulnerability, it's going to be a lot harder for them to then open up and trust, because you're really building trust, and people work with people that they know, like, and trust. And if they don't feel that way around you, then it's going to be very clear, and they're not going to be as open and honest with you. And I think that's how I get to those levels with people within corporate settings, with their leader sitting right there, because I'm creating an open, safe, non-judgmental space to say, we all want to get better. We all want the same thing. We want you to feel like when you show up to work that you have a meaningful and valuable piece in this organization. And likewise, that your boss respects and knows that, and let's have some conversations that facilitates that as well, if you're not feeling that way. And if you are feeling supported, then great. Then let's use that opportunity to thank that leader for creating that space for you. I think a lot of it is just open communication, trusting the process, of executive vision imagery, because what it really does is open up that communication pathway for leaders and their teams to come together and get to know each other better. We spend 80% of our time with the people that we work with. So I want that time to be valuable. I never wanted to show up in a corporate setting and feel like I had, you know, no friends or that I couldn't trust anyone. And whenever that happened, you know, that wasn't a fun or happy place at all. And so to push through and kind of work through that through my own experience, I don't want anyone else to have to go through that.
So you kind of had to get rid of the whole political science thing and not be a political monster to figure out how that works. And you had to go the other way, which is how to be helpful and kind, which is so bizarre that you would switch it like that. You could switch it like that, right? Because you were trained in a different way.
Yes. Well, I remember my political science, I think it was like a 495 class, it was my senior year. And he asked our class, you know, how many of you guys, and I want to say that it was like Latin American politics related too. It wasn't even like U.S. government or U.S. politics related, but he said, how many of you want a career in politics? Like you're going to go into public policy, you're going to go into law school, et cetera. So several people raised their hand, and then he said, okay. And he's like, well, out of this, he goes, let me just tell you the number one job for political scientists is comedian. And the number two is social worker. And I'm like, well, I want to do neither of those things. So I don't know where that leaves me, but
you pivoted. That's the key.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So I guess I have one last question. Well, I have two. One more that's been in here. Have you built a team around what you're doing, or is it still just you?
It is still just me. I do have an operations manager who is amazing and who I rely on significantly. And when you talk about relationships and building relationships, we worked together at GM. And so when she left and I found out that she left, because I had already left, we had a conversation and it kind of one thing led to another. And I'm like, wow, I could use your rock star-ness with what it is I'm trying to do. And so she signed on and she's amazing. And I think that's also the cool thing of identifying like other powerful females, you know, in the space that you can bring along to say, you have a need right now. You want to raise kids and you want to, you know, be a mom, but you also still want to be able to support your family. I can help you do both of those things, which is really cool feeling. So far it's just me, but the idea is that by the end of this year into 2025, I have plans to scale to where we'll add some additional trainers just to cover the ground that it is that, you know, the momentum and the speed that we're at which I'm growing. I can't at this unfortunate, I guess, way be in, you know, four places at one time.
So then that's funny. Everybody listening is here we are. We're juggling everything. What's she going to do? Expand. Take it to heart. This is how entrepreneurs roll. Everything's an opportunity.
Right. But I think she's going to be strategic about
Absolutely.
It. And I think, you know, she's built it to a place where she has the ability to do that with the relationship she has. And I think that leads me.
It's not a negative, by the way. That's
a
positive.
I know.
I'm all in on that.
Leads me to my final question, which is, what is your end game? Where do you see yourself way down the road?
Well, I talk a lot about vision, and my podcast is called Creating the Vision because I love asking people where their vision is. So when it's flipped on me, so I create a vision board every year, and that's actually my process ends that way. It's a unique, you know, kind of way to visually represent the goals you're working towards. And so what's on my vision board is to become, you know, a TEDx speaker, to become, you know, a professional speaker, just, you know, to work with as many corporations as possible. I feel like there's a book somewhere along the way down the road, to truly tell my story, and more so for an opportunity for just, potential entrepreneurs or people in corporate to kind of learn from. And, I see a lot of collaborations with people because I love expanding my network and I love pulling in from, different female entrepreneurs who are doing similar things, but yet different, where we can collaborate and really lean into women in corporate, women in entrepreneurship. So I see a lot of those things in my future. I mean, I would say, honestly, like world domination is probably in there somewhere.
So I'm going to laugh and I'm going to keep it full circle here. So in the beginning of the podcast, we kind of alluded to you were going to do your corporate thing until 65. Right. You were kind of had that goal, that vision. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, here you are. You've created this entrepreneurial dream where there is no end game for you.
Ever.
You literally just spoke and it was winding down the path. I see the peaks and the valleys of what you're going to go through. But there's no end game for you.
No, not at all. I want a nonprofit sector of what I do because I don't think that we teach kids how to goal set and how to truly goal set. and plan for their life, things that are crucial and vital. And yet we kick them out of the house at 18 and tell them, okay, go be adults. And we haven't really given them the foundation for that. So creatingvisionaries.org is coming. It's actually coming in 2024. So I see that growing and hopefully becoming a part of, you know, curriculum or school systems where I can go and speak and talk about the importance of how setting goals is vital to, you know, our life. We have to have something to work towards, and we might continue to move the goalpost. You know, it's all about habit formation. Are we building those positive habits? Are we doing small daily, you know, daily small tasks and that are manageable to get us from one, you know, one step to the next? All of the things that I work with corporations on, but I want to take it into a level that, you know, that 8-year-old, 9-year-old, when I was in third grade and her teacher said, you know, get out the piece of paper and write down those three goals that, you know, she felt. Not that, you know, I had transferred it to a post-it note. It stayed on my mirror till I was a senior in high school, but not really having much of a clear path to achieving those things, just knowing that's the direction I'm going to head in. So that's the direction I'm going to go. But if I had had some tools and resources to help get me there faster, I think of just, yeah, who knows? Yeah. So many more opportunities could have been opened up. And I think that's what our youth and our world would be so much better off if we had those opportunities for our kids.
We couldn't agree more. Well, we really appreciate you being on the show. Would you like to give a couple plugs to your companies where people get a hold of you and find out what you do?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me and for all of the craziness today through all of the ups and downs. I mean, that's life, right? That's the entrepreneurial journey. That's the motherhood journey. That's the, that's the piece of it. But you can find me online at my website, mmsconsultingfirm.com. You can email me if you'd like to talk about what my program looks like for your corporation or your team retreat or team event. And it's just maria@mmsconsultingfirm.com. I'm on Instagram and LinkedIn. I'm pretty active in both of those places. Just at my full name, Maria Maldonado Smith is my handle. And you can also order my customer facing tool for creating a vision board. And it's called Creating a Vision Board, and it's available on Amazon.
Fantastic. Well, we really appreciate you being on the show. Another edition of Empowering Entrepreneurs. I'm Glenn Harper.
And Julie Smith.
At Harper & Company CPA Plus, we just don't care about the numbers. We care about helping you tap into the greatness of your entrepreneurial journey. You deserve a partner who has helped hundreds of businesses go from paying the bills to building the business and lifestyle of their dreams. Go to our website and download our free guide entitled Entrepreneurial Success Formula, How to Avoid Managing Your Business from Your Bank Account. The link is in this episode's show notes.